I think you should build a career in data science.
Welcome to Build a Career in Data Science. I'm your host, Jacqueline Nolas.
And I'm also your host, Emily Robinson.
This podcast is a data download into all the non-technical knowledge and skills you need to succeed in a data science career. From getting into the field to becoming a seasoned expert, we're covering it here. In season one of the podcast, we'll be discussing a different chapter of our book, also called Build a Career in Data Science, each week. You can buy the book at bestbook.cool and get 40% off with the code BUILDBOOK40%. But if you don't have it yet, you won't get any less enjoyment out of the podcast.
But do buy it.
This week, we're diving into chapter two of our book, which is all about the different types of companies that employ data science. When we were writing the book, this chapter we felt was really important because so much of the data science position is different depending on what company you work at. Big company versus small, depending on the industry, all these things can greatly influence what your actual job is as a data science scientist. And so by us taking a chapter of our book to just cover some of the example types of companies that may employ data scientists, so you can use that when you're looking at what jobs and companies you may want to work at, this just felt really important to what we were doing. So this week, we're going to talk about what sorts of companies employ data scientists. But before we do that, let's introduce ourselves a little bit so you understand the context that we're coming from. I guess, Emily, you want to discuss... Wow, I did not get very much sleep last night. Words are hard. Do you want to introduce yourself first?
I have worked at Etsy, which is for those of you who aren't familiar, it's an online marketplace for handmade vintage and craft goods. It was founded in 2005, so it had been around for a little bit when I joined. And I also worked at DataCamp, which was more of a startup. It was 60 people when I joined, and now I'm at Warby Parker, which has over 100 retail stores. And what about you, Jacqueline?
When I finished my schooling, I worked for a while at... an e-commerce company, so custom printed objects. So I did data science there, helping them with like forecasting, things like that. I worked for a little bit at Boeing, helping with Boeing's marketing, doing data science for them. Then I went and got a PhD, and after that, I've been doing consulting since. So consulting with lots and lots of different companies, from big tech companies like Microsoft and Adobe to like tiny startups that want to try data science for the first time. So a lot of the companies that we're about to discuss, I have consulted for. So I've kind of seen a bit of the inside. And some of them I've actually like directly been employed by too. When I think about this chapter and this podcast episode, to me, this was just the subtweet podcast episode, because it's just like chock full of things that like I learned about what I liked and didn't like at work at these different companies. But like, you know, I don't know if I would say that publicly to about all these, but like, you know,
which you just did.
Yeah.
Yes. In the book, we don't refer to any companies by name. They're all archetypes. And I do say like, I can't wait till I have like, you know, I don't know, like 10 previous companies where like anything can really be anonymous, right? Because like, right after when I had just worked at one company, it's like if I, you know, you see people tweet sometimes about like, oh yeah, like one time my manager did this or like I had this experience. You can't really do that if you've only ever had one manager.
Yeah, you know, I think about this a lot. So this is a good divergence because I struggle with this, which is, yes, as a data scientist, I sometimes want to talk about, hey, here are things I've seen companies do that I think is really troubling or problematic or, you know, just makes for a less good team. But I'm always afraid if I do that, then like the moment I've made that blog post, my former boss, blah, 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 is going to see that and be like, okay, you're blacklisted from the industry, which I don't think actually happens. I don't think anyone cares about anyone else that much. But it is like a very natural fear, I think, to not want to talk about negative sides of a company because it might come back to you, to bite you.
Yeah, but I think that's where having consulted for a bunch of companies helps out here, because they can never like prove that it was, as long as other people don't know definitively what it was, they won't care.
Right, but and I think you can also say, oh, this is an amalgamation of many of the stereotypes I've seen. At no point have I ever talked about one company, and that kind of covers you a little.
Exactly. And plus, like, this chapter was also informed, as all of our chapters were, by like talking to other people that we know, right? So one thing I feel like that made our book a lot better was not only the informal conversation we've just had throughout our career, but also having an interview at the end of every chapter, so we get the perspective of another data scientist. So that's definitely helped out here as well.
Yeah. And so let's talk about, I'll briefly introduce like the five archetypes we have of data science employing companies. And then we can dive into them a little more, but let me just set the stage. So the five we have in the chapter are, one is called MTC, which is a massive tech company, which is just, you know, like generically like your Microsoft, Google, Amazon, like company that has tens of thousands of people, many, many, many software engineers trying to be on the cutting edge of technology. So that's archetype one of people who, companies that employ data scientists. The second one was basically a retail company, right? If you're like a Nordstrom, you're, you know, like a Target, something like that, where it's, you're not, tech isn't what you're trying to do. Like you're not selling tech, but you are using technology a bit. And so usually your company came around before technology was a thing. So like, just, you're kind of always playing a little bit of like catch up of, we need to now kind of, you know, get up a little more up to speed. Let's get our databases to be better. Like, you're a little bit, maybe not on the curve, a little bit behind the curve, but that's fine. You're focusing on selling stuff. The third one is like a startup. And so a startup being like, you got like maybe less than 100 employees. You got like a dream. We're going to be a company that sells blah, blah, blah. And you're, one of those things is it needs a data scientist for that product to work. Or like you just, the company believes data science is important. And so when you work as a data scientist there, you're often like the only data scientist. Then number four was like a mid-tech company, maybe a little bit smaller than an Airbnb, I would say. But like, you know, something like, you know, it's not like an Amazon. It's not like a Google, but, you know, something a little smaller, but still pretty techy.
Maybe like Lyft, you know, like you have anywhere from like 800 to a couple thousand people. You know, maybe Lyft a few years ago.
Yeah, or maybe Airbnb, maybe that is Airbnb. But like, yeah, one of these companies, like kind of techie, but not like massive. And then lastly, we have basically a defense contractor. So like Lockheed Martin or something, you know, a company that is just absolutely enormous, tons of money from government contracts or, you know, things that are more highly regulated and has data scientists to help aid in that process.
Yeah, and of course here, this doesn't cover like every possible company you could work at, because you could be like, well, what about a hedge fund? Or what about like JP Morgan? But part of the point in writing this chapter was that obviously we're not going to cover every possible company that you could interview with, but to start to see like the pros and cons of different types, and then also what axes companies vary along. So for example, even if we didn't cover the specific company you're thinking of, you know, you could realize like, oh, okay, they lay out like some things that are important for me to think about are salary, freedom, mentorship available. And you can really look at that at any type of company and get an idea what it might be like based on both your interviews, but then also, you know, as we talk about in our book, a smaller company, like under 100 people, is almost always going to have more freedom than like a 10,000 plus person company, no matter what industry.
Right. And something to your point of like, what about a hedge fund? Well, like that has regulations, which makes it, you know, like if you work in finance, that generally means you have more regulations, would make it closer to like the defense archetype we've listed. So yeah, you can kind of interpolate. Ideally, a convex, let's get mathy. It's like a convex hull of jobs you made. And anyway, do you want to pick one? Do you want to just dive right in? Let's talk about them.
Yeah, let's dive right in. Okay. So I'll start out with the, how about the early stage startup? Yeah, so one thing here, right? So you've got an early stage startup, and often if you're joining this, like you will likely be the first data scientist, or maybe the second. You know, maybe they have a data analyst. And one thing about that is, you know, it's exciting, right? You get to shape the team. Like Jacqueline and I will definitely talk later in this podcast about that whole thing, being the first data scientist. But something about being an early stage startup is you're going to wear a lot of hats. You're going to do, you know, have to do a lot of the groundwork, maybe some data engineering type stuff to get the data into your data lake. You're going to be building dashboards. You're going to be maybe consulting with the executive team because, you know, it's small enough to know everyone at the company. So that all can be really exciting. But there are some downsides too. So there aren't as processes in place. You're not going to have mentorship most likely. I mean, maybe in some areas, maybe for example, there's one data engineer, you get mentorship from there, but there's not going to be a whole suite of senior data scientists. You know, if you're someone who really likes, you know, stability and, you know, working fairly regular hours, that's something that it depends on the startup, but can be harder to find because, you know, often it's an all hands on deck type situation where you're all really trying to just help the company survive and grow as quickly as possible. So if you're looking for like a not so stressful, like 9-to-5 jobs, you kind of stick to your prescribed job duties, you know, everything like HR, you know, is every the onboarding process is really smooth, you know, all that kind of stuff. This is probably not the company for you.
Yeah. So have you worked at one of these? Not to like put you on the spot. I'm just curious. Like, I have some opinions that I'm wondering if they're going to like correlate with what you've experienced.
I have, although mine was a little unusual. So I worked at DataCamp, but you know, DataCamp does data science online education, and it was a bit unusual because we had more data scientists than I think is typical for a company of the size. So we had a chief data scientist. We had a couple data engineers. I think we had like 8 data scientists at some point with only 100 people in the company. So that was definitely a more unusual situation. And it also wasn't the very earliest stages. Like they'd been around a few years. So it wasn't, you know, we're all trying to figure out what even we're trying to do here.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to elaborate on one of the points you made, which is I think that when I've been at companies this size, and I've been at a couple, it's kind of like the highs are high and the lows are so low. Right? Like the high of like, hey, I had an idea for a cool model. Like, what if we made this kind of simulator tool and no one was there to stop me? And so I just got to do it. And then when I did it, I got a ton of praise. It helped us, you know, the company succeed. And like, I got to really point in something and be like, that was work I did that helped make this a lot better. And it's much harder to get that if you're at like Google or something where there's, you know, so many data scientists all working. Like, it's different than being just the one who at the beginning can make, you know, a real difference. But the downside is like when things go bad, they go so bad, right? Like if you have a disagreement with like a vice president at a startup, like you don't have like, you know, at a massive company, you could like, well, maybe I'll change teams. Maybe I'll just work on something else because there's so many things going on. But a startup, it's like things are so focused that if you have a problem and you have like disagreements, it's just a lot harder to like, it's a lot harder to, you know, kind of avoid these problems. They can really fester up. And I've had that be a problem in a number of situations working at smaller companies where I've been frustrated because of, you know, just not being able to handle certain things that were going on that I didn't agree with.
Yeah. And I do think on your first point, like that's something to keep in mind is if you're someone that really likes to like, you know, move quickly, try out new things, you know, not have a lot standing in your way, then probably a startup's close to you. I know someone who went from a startup to a healthcare company, and that was very frustrating for her because, you know, things there, just like there was so much more bureaucracy. And, you know, it made sense in a lot of cases. You're in healthcare, you're doing trials and stuff, you like need to be pretty careful. But she realized that just wasn't the type of data science work she wanted to do when she was, now she has another jobs where they're like, want her to go as fast as possible. So that's a great point to keep in mind of, you know, the highs can be really high. And also because you can have a really good feeling of camaraderie with a team. Like I know, you know, it's often a lot of young folks joining startups and there are various reasons for that. But one advantage is, you know, they may have just moved to the city. Maybe they just graduate college or a few years out. A lot of people make good friends at startups and, you know, this can have a downside as well, because it can encourage like working really late. It can encourage like all your company, all your life being your company, including your whole friends. But it can be an upside for folks if you don't get too sucked into it, because people, you know, it's a smaller office environment. You get to know folks more. It's going to be more casual. So that can be fun as well.
Yeah, that's such a downside for me. Like this is our episode. We're talking, oh my God. Like if I never had to go to a company happy hour again in my life, I would be content, right? Because I just
But when you're like 23 or something and you just moved to a new city, like, did you always feel that way?
That's how they get you. No, that's how they get you, right? They get you. So they think, I did not always feel that way, but I think when I was 23, I felt like I had to go to these things. And I thought that there was this feeling of like, oh, I'd be perceived as a bad employee if I wasn't being a part of these events. And I think that kind of made me feel like, oh, and so I should like them. Like, this is the thing I'm supposed to like. And as a 33-year-old, I'm like, no, I do not like that. Which is just to say, yeah, I think you kind of just, as you were saying, this can be used, these things can be used as like manipulation to get people to work harder than they are reasonably should be expected to. And like, you know, if you like happy hours, that's great. Like, a power to you. This is my personal preference. But, like, personally, as a 33-year-old, I'm like, I've moved past that point in my life. Like, my favorite jobs are the one where you show up at work, you have a good time, you dance with the people there, and then, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock rolls around, and you leave, and you don't talk to them. And that's great.
Yeah, but I would think it's important to keep in mind for folks, so it's not just it's not just a personal preference when you're at the company. I think actually you were probably perceiving that correctly, that it might have been a negative if you didn't go to company events at that company. So I think that's something to also look out for in a company culture, is like, how much is it expected that you stay late, that you go to the happy hours, you know, that you have lunch with your teammates every day, versus like going out for an hour or something, or reading a book for an hour. Like, those are things to watch out for, because that can be something. You know, it wouldn't come up in a formal performance review, like she never came to the company happy hours, but it could be coded as like, she's not a team player, or just like, I don't agree with this, but it can happen. So yes. It is something to be aware of.
Yes. Okay, let's switch to a company that's like the opposite of that. let's talk about the massive government contractor. And so in the book, we talk about basically like a Lockheed Martin kind of like, you know, like defense contractor. But I think this also can apply, this stereotype can apply for a lot of healthcare companies, or, you know, banks, companies where it's like you are working in an industry that is highly regulated and things move slowly, right? You know, move fast and break things is not a good idea for people's banking accounts, right? Like, or God help us with, you know, the 2008 financial recession. Please don't move fast and break things. So... these sorts of jobs, when you think about like working at like a defense contractor, it's very, very slow, which is to say, like, if you're a data scientist, you may say, hey, it would be a good idea if we were to make a blank model, a model that predicted the churn of our, like, I don't know, government contracts or something. And whereas a startup, you may be just like, go do it. At a defense contractor, you may have to talk to your boss, who's going to talk about that quarter's priorities, who's going to blah, blah, blah. And then you're going to make the model, and they're going to be like, well, let's validate it for 18 months. And then, okay, now we can roll it out. And so what this means is, it just isn't, compared to like a startup, it's an environment where it's much more expected that things are going to go slow. And so like with your work week, you know, at a startup, you may be working like 50 hours a week. And those 50 hours, you're like really working hard, coming up with models, doing stuff, like every minute of that stuff, you are feeling busy. At a defense contractor, it's like 35 to 40 hours, and half of those hours you're a little bored, but you know, that's just, you can't, you are going slowly because the system around you is going slowly, and you can't change that. You also are much more likely to be regulated on what tools you can use, right? So like, they may say you can't use open source packages, so like, you know, you may have to use like an older version of Python or things like that, or you may only be able to look at data on servers that are completely locked from the internet, so you can't download packages you might need to do analysis without like getting an IT person to download it for you. So there's all these sorts of like kind of roadblocks that are kind of put in your way from just getting the job done, which sounds like a terrible thing, and for some people that is terrible. But if you're like, no, I really just want a job where I can do some data science, but like I don't have to like super stress about it, and when I go home, I know I'm going to only work 35 to 40 hours a week, and I'm going to go home and relax afterwards, and that's okay, that these kinds of jobs can, you know, be quite appealing.
Yeah, I think also, you know, there are some definitely like, you know, mission driven organizations that have this kind of bureaucracy, you know, like say you really care about like healthcare, right? Or like vaccine trials, or, you know, some government work falls into that, that, you know, at the end of the day, you're like, well, things go a little slower, there's bureaucracy, but like, I believe the work that I'm doing, you know, is helpful, necessary work. And I think it's also, it certainly can be frustrating to have all these regulations. But I think, as you were sort of saying, Jacqueline, like there are reasons around it, right? There are, like, you know, you think of like defense contractors stuff. Cause I remember someone joking once, it's like, oh, you know, it's like, you know, being like, that's so ridiculous that you wouldn't, you know, you couldn't download an open source package. Like, what is like some, you know, foreign country going to do? Like make a, you know, put a virus in an open source package in case like a defense person download? It's like, yes, actually, absolutely, right? If anyone could just download anything, like, absolutely, that would be a target for an attack. So yes, it is pretty extreme. But I do also think, you know, it's not, I would not especially want to work in one of those environments, but I can definitely understand people who do.
Right. Well, and I think that's it's some of it is like, no, there's actually a legitimate fear of like downloading a package as a virus. But there's also a lot of times at these companies, they're not yet used to data science. And so like, maybe you're talking to an IT team and there's like a database and you're like, oh, I want to be able to access the data directly. And they're like, oh no, I can't ever let you directly look at the data because it has PII in it. It's like you will never actually be able to like read in directly, not in a production system. And it's like, okay, but I can't do the job of a data scientist unless I can explore it a little bit. And like that kind of a conversation you won't have at a tech startup. You will only have at a giant defense or, you know, whatever government contracting kind of highly regulated industry. So some points in favor, like let me try some other points in favor of these kinds of jobs is they're very generally, especially defense contractors for some reason, but they're very regulated like promotion schedules. Like you need to be, if you are in this job for this number of years, you will get a promotion sort of a thing, much more than like merit, which sounds bad, but like, again, it makes it so it's not like you're crazy working 80 hours because maybe you'll get the promotion, maybe you'll not. Like things are a little bit more clear. And also it's, you're less likely, I think, to get laid off like dramatically. Like layoffs are, or certainly like they won't just fire you like that because there's so much regulation around like not letting people go unless you really mean it. So like it's just generally a more stable job than some of these other things we're going to talk about. Yeah, I mean, I know people at these kind of jobs who like them. I personally, I do not have the emotional dexterity, no, the emotional rigor to handle these kinds of jobs. You know, like I worked, as I said, I worked at Boeing, and I think it's a great company. I think it's really cool. I just personally am very much like a, I want to be moving fast and breaking things. And so like, I just, my personality doesn't align as well with that kind of job. But I don't think that means it's like a bad job or the people there didn't like it. Like, it's just for me, it wasn't necessarily the right fit.
Yeah. So let's talk about another one of the companies. So let's go to like another big company, but this time, like very different than events contractor. Let's do the massive tech company. So let's talk about those Googles and Amazons, because I think also when folks think about like, oh, I want to work as a data scientist, that's often one of the first companies, like first group of companies that come to mind, right? The FANG companies.
Yes. Okay, so I have some, yeah. So, I mean, yes, basically these are jobs like Amazon, Google. Oh, also, did you know FANG has Netflix in it? Like, it's weird that FANG came out as Netflix, and I don't feel like anyone's talked about Netflix as a powerhouse in industry in, like, the last decade, but somehow there's...
Oh, I don't think that's true. I've heard really good things about Netflix. Oh, they pay, apparently they pay great salary, you know, like, they're doing a lot of good stuff.
Okay, no, I've heard that they're doing good stuff, but I've not, like, they're not, like... Amazon or Microsoft, like they're
changing. Yeah, I guess that's true. That's true.
Like if it was FANG, like Airbnb too, you'd be like, that's a little weird. Like anyway, it doesn't matter. Just so these companies, yeah, you know, tens of thousands of people, thousands of software developers, thousands of data scientists. And yes, I think Emily, you're exactly right. Which is for some reason, I mean, you're studying to be a data scientist. Like the dream is to go to one of these big companies. So the upside is that everyone there is technical, super smart people. There are lots of people who can mentor you, provide support, right? Like there's just so many people there who are good or, you know, who just know what they're doing that can be a real benefit. The downside is there's so many people there, I would say, who know what they're doing, which means that everyone has a different opinion, right? This person's an expert and this expert says we should make a Hadoop server. This expert says we should make a... we should put everything in Spark. And, blah, 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 blah. And so what happens is... it's like a too many cooks, I feel like, sort of situation on your job where you may find that like, you like you know, you may, you're like, oh, I'm going to pull in some data. And like, oh, that data scattered over 20 different databases at 20 different parts of the company where everyone has a different opinion. And because everyone's an expert, if you're like, oh, I think we should do this, then you're going to have to argue it with a lot of people and things like that. And so you get to be like in a group of experts and it looks good on your resume to say you've worked at one of these companies. But like, you do not have, I would say, the broad freedom to do what you maybe want at other companies. And, because there's so much data in so many places in so many different ways, it's actually sometimes harder to get things done than at like a company that is smaller and just has one database or, you know, a small number of data sets to work with.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, right, so more about sort of like the pros and cons. So, you know, one thing, so I was talking, and this is on the engineering side, but I imagine like the data science side is fairly similar. But a former colleague who used to work at Google, and he was saying it's like interesting, right, because so at Google, you know, you think about these companies, you're often, well, one, you think about the perks, right? Less so now that we're all in virtual work, but the like, you know, the nap pods and the free food and all that sort of stuff. But also what comes with that is often people are working longer hours because it's, you know, but the thing I hadn't realized, but that my friend told me is that actually it is fairly competitive to get promotions and hard, but also there are some people who just stay at the same levels for like, you know, decade plus, right? I forget what that level was in Google. It's like level 4 or 5. And then it's really hard to get to the next level, but they're also not going to fire you. Like, so you can just sort of coast, not, not coast along, but do sort of like 35 hour, like 40 hour weeks, like, you know, pull in a good paycheck. If you don't care about, like, you know, being very ambitious and getting to the next level. So it's funny because I think people usually don't think of like FANG companies that you can do that, but at least at some of them, you definitely can, like once you've sort of carved out your niche, just keep going along happily in that, and just not, if you're not worried about getting promotions or, you know, being like the superstar.
Yeah, that's true. And you get, I mean, you get paid pretty well, right?
You do get paid.
These companies, they make lots of money, so yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big advantage, right? The salary is great. The base salary is very good, but a lot of the compensation also comes in terms of perks. So I think Google has, I think it's like 50% unlimited 401k matching. So if you max out your 401k, that's almost an extra $10,000 a year. They also have... yeah, just like all, and stock options. That's a huge thing, that are not, or restricted stock units. So that's a big part of people's compensation, comes in the form of stock at the company, you know, if they're at Google, a Google stock, or Amazon at Amazon stock. And the idea there is also that then they're invested in the future of the company, because if the stock goes up, they get paid more.
Yeah. So I don't this company, this massive technology, it pains me. Because I feel like everyone's like, this is the gold standard for what like a dream data science job is. And I, like, my heart says, no, it's not. Like, I've been heartbroken when I've, you know, kind of talked to people or consulted for companies or, you know, had used them as like a vendor. And like, just kind of got a little bit like of a look on the inside. I'm like, oh, that does not seem like a great, you know, like in many ways, there seems like a real problems in working these kinds of jobs. But also, like, I don't want to crush dreams. If you want to work at Google and that's your dream, like, live your dream. But like, for me... as a person who really likes to, you know, I enjoy more of the startup style of like, I want to be the first person in to figure out some problems and really make a difference. Like, it is very hard to do that. And at these big companies, you may have to fight with a lot of people to get stuff done.
Yeah. I think also to keep in mind with the big companies, like, you know, what your experiences as a data scientist on one team could be pretty much completely different from another team. Like, yeah, certain things are standardized across Google, but just like, you know, depending on which area you work in, it could be a more startup-y area within Google. It could be like, you know, a core part of their product. It could be a new team, an experienced team. So just keep that in mind, versus if you ask someone like, what's it like, you know, we might talk about the kind of mid-tech company, like what's it like to work in data science there? They can give you a pretty good picture that's like going to be different across people, but there might still be just one data science, core data science team, versus at these companies, you might talk to someone and they'll end up having a totally, totally different tech stack, like, you know, different interactions with their teams, just because it's so big.
Yeah. So I, at one point, consulted for Microsoft's Xbox data science team, but only several days into starting the consulting, I realized that was one of like 15 Xbox data science teams, just because it's so big and Xbox is such a big thing organization. And like, I just like, that blew my mind, where it's like, right, that like there's so, like these companies can be so big and they have so many different data science groups, and sometimes they overlap a little, sometimes they're totally distinct. It's like, they're just these big companies, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, so let's scale that back a little bit. Let's go back to like the earlier days in those companies.
Can we scale it back even more and take a light break?
Sure.
This week's episode is sponsored by JSON. Are you struggling with data that doesn't fit into a tabular format? Can your data not live in a CSV file because items nest inside of different items? Break free of the shackles of rows and columns with JSON. JSON files let you store data with almost any structure. Arrays inside of arrays, a dictionary of dictionaries, JSON can handle it all. And because JSON requires no structure to your data, you can even have each data point have a different format. It's all fine. Unlike JSON's competitors, JSON doesn't break due to improperly formatted whitespace. Support the podcast and get 1 month of JSON free when you name your files datascicareer.json.
So let's go back in time a little bit, because even like Google and Amazon and Facebook were once like, you know, sort of younger tech companies. So we already talked about their, you know, sort of similar what their startup phase might have been like. But what about when they were more like, you know, around like 800 to a couple thousand people? Do you want to talk a little bit, Jacqueline, about what it's like to work at that kind of tech company?
Yeah. So this is a company, yeah, like we were saying, you know, like Lyft, Airbnb, something like that, where it's like they have tech. Tech is a core part of what they do, but they're not like a giant company selling tech to many, 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 many other companies or things like that. And so the thing, this is like, you kind of, it's a little bit like the best of both worlds, I would say, that we've kind of been talking about. It's small enough that as a data scientist, you can conceivably make a meaningful difference to the company, right? Like, you could make a new model that gets deployed. It makes a difference. You may make a PowerPoint that you show the executives or a dashboard, things like that. Like you can meet with this, you could meet with a CEO potentially, but it's big enough that there's enough data science infrastructure that it's not like you're putting the first database into place or like, oh, no one's ever set up R or Python before. Like there are people you can talk to when you need help. And usually like, so, you know, your data science team is like, you know, probably somewhere between like, I'd say 15 and 30 people, something like that. And usually it starts to split a little bit. So you have like the experimentation team, the forecasting team, the blah, blah, blah team. And so it's nice because you kind of have like your own little niche. Like I'm a member of the forecasting team, but like you have people you can talk to in other areas and like kind of, you have a nice community. So that I would say, like, it's kind of like, it's a nice blend of some of these things we were talking about. That said, you're not maybe going to get the salaries as high as you are in the massive tech companies. You're not going to make as much of an influence as you are in the startup. And like, you know, if you're an R person, maybe they already all use Python, so you have to switch or vice versa. You know, so like you're not going to get quite the, it's like the hybrid, it's dual classing, right? It's like the hybrid of these, you know, some of these other jobs of like tech company, but not maybe so massive everything is confusing and complicated.
Yeah, and you don't like... you don't necessarily also the security of the massive tech company and job security, I mean, or like the defense contractor, like unfortunately we saw with COVID, part of this because like a few of these companies are in the travel industry, but you know, Airbnb, Lyft were both hit pretty hard by layoffs. Now that's obviously a very unusual situation, but it is, you know, these companies can have their fortunes go up and down a little bit more. But I do think like you were saying, Jacqueline, it can be a really nice sweet spot because you get, you know, as you're sort of saying, the data engineering is usually in a pretty decent place, the data sciences. But one thing I do want to bring up is because these companies are a little bit older, you know, they're also not, you know, they still do have some bureaucracy and some things take a lot of time. So, for example, you know, when I was working at Etsy, we had everything, you know, we had physical like data servers because when Etsy was made there, like the cloud was not really a thing yet. And then they did migrate to Google Cloud. They started that process while I was there. And I think it took about 2 years to do the full migration. And obviously that was not something I was a part of, and I don't think many data scientists were, but that took a lot of engineers' time. So there are certain, you know, that's like one of the potential drawbacks in being in a company that's been around a bit is because maybe the solution you would choose now if you were starting a company wasn't available then, and you're going to have to make do with kind of what's already been put in place.
Yeah, and actually, let me say, on the human side, something similar happens, right? If there's like maybe like one of the first couple data scientists was there at the beginning of the company and now has still stayed around years later, so they have a ton of power in the company. They also dislike any change, and they're like, oh, we did everything the best the first time. You want to go in and move to the cloud? Like, and you know, like you may have like a negative personality that's stuck around since the beginning of the company, and you have to deal with the fact that that person still has most of the power, like that data scientist still has most of the power. And so you maybe, like at an enormous company, you could kind of go around them. At a tiny company, this problem wouldn't exist yet. But you're like, you're in a weird place where like humans are sometimes, I'm not gonna say, you know, like there's kind of like some human complications that have built up as the company's grown really quickly. And so like they maybe haven't 100% put in good procedures to handle all these things yet.
Yes, yes. So, and not just on the data science side, but also on the project management side, maybe, you know, there might be like kickoffs of like, let's spend 6 months like trying to like redo all our project management stuff and, you know, interview a bunch of people, and it may or may not help in the end. So there definitely can be some of that like bureaucratic elements as well. But I mean, on the other hand, you know, some of that has been done and done successfully. So there's some very good processes too as well, right? The data science team may have a good process around how do we document, how do we check other people's code, you know, how do we organize data science projects, which if you're, you know, just starting out can be really helpful because you can learn some of the best practices from the rest of the team.
Great. Okay. So let's talk about the last archetype, which is like the retail company. So like, if you imagine you're like, I don't know, Bed Bath & Beyond or something, some retailer that sells retail products and
existed and so, before being online, right? You know, it's not a physical presence. Yeah.
Right. So started as like a kind of like more traditional store. And at some point realized, hey, we need to understand our data and get the value out of it. Cause you know, we've read all those news articles saying that data is the new oil. So they have a data science team, but like, and they have stored the data, but like, you know, maybe their data is in kind of like more legacy systems, like more traditional things. Like the data science team they have is small, and like the people who are on it, a lot of them maybe weren't data scientists before. They moved from other departments, like, you know, like finance or things like that. And so this sort of a situation is kind of like, it's cool because if you go in as a data science there, you can make a big splash, right? That data science team is being relied on for the whole company. So like every insight you create as that team is like, oh, wow, this is amazing. We haven't seen this kind of stuff before. But you do still have to deal with like some legacy systems, right? Like maybe the database that the company stores all the data in, like dates are stored as strings, and that's the way it's just always been. And like, you know, there's just like problems that you have to, that maybe at a bigger, a more technical company they would have dealt with. And then because it's not a tech company, they're just the salaries are lower, right? They don't have all that sweet cash from selling software. They actually have to like buy products, you know, buy goods to, you know, sell. And so you kind of maybe don't get that big salary number that you get at some other places. But like, again, it's a little bit more comfortable. It's not like a crazy hyper intense situation. It's a little bit more relaxed than maybe some of these other companies.
Yeah. And I think what you were saying, like similar to like the kind of mid-tech company we're just talking about, this also has a balance on a lot of the different factors. But I do think, one thing to you know, if you're looking at these types of companies is to investigate, like, what's their data engineering situation like? You know, how bad is the legacy systems? Have other people begun doing work? And also, you know, what's the appetite for data science here, right? Is it just like, you know, one VP or something pushed for this, but then everyone else is pretty skeptical about bringing in data science, especially because, you know, folks at that company I'm sure they have people who specialized in forecasting sales, like, you know, doing, you know, marketing, like all this other stuff that aren't data scientists. And so I do think you have to be, you know, think about when you're coming in, not just being like, all right, like, you know, marketing team, like throw out anything you've ever done before, like the data scientist is here to save you. But really, you know, you need those communication skills. You need that, you know, to work with these teams, to understand, okay, what can I learn from them for all their use doing this? And then what can I contribute with maybe some more like, you know, different methods or different like, you know, programming tools that I can add.
Yeah, and I think you just brought up a good point, which is for some companies, like probably a defense contractor, probably the massive tech companies, you could get away with not being able to communicate to non-technical people a lot more easily than something like this, right? Because at like a massive tech company, almost there's so many technical people. If you can only find out how to communicate to those people, you can maybe, you know, skirt by. Whereas a company like this, or like a startup, you really have to be able to talk to non-technical people because like so much of your job is doing that. And there are so few technical, you know, data scientists there for you to converse with.
Yeah. So, you know, we've covered like a lot in these five companies. So I just wanted to give sort of like a quick, you know, summary idea about all of these, which is, you know, as we mentioned at the start, like, you know, certainly a good amount of the jobs you're finding in your job search might be like, you're like, yep, that's the company I'm looking at is a defense contractor, is a startup, like I can map it exactly, but let's say you can't. So just want to go over like some of the, you know, important factors we considered, you know, when thinking about companies. So the first is, you know, is bureaucracy, right? So this is something the government contractor and massive tech have a lot more of, and the startup almost has none of. So often this is correlated to the size of the company and then also the industry, you know, if it's a more or less heavily regulated industry. You also have salary. So thinking about like salary in terms of like both the base salary and the benefits a company offers and any stock options or restricted stock units. And this will usually be higher in tech and lower in, you know, sort of like in government contractors or like retailers. And then we have job security. So this is, you know, how likely is it that this job is going to exist? You know, are people being fired all over the place? How's the industry doing? You've got your chances to learn. So how, you know, how many other data scientists are there that you can learn from? Even, you know, for example, it could even be past data scientists, right? Like, can you read documentation? Even data scientists that have gone before, you know, have they left behind, you know, documentation or other things you can learn? So those are just some of the things to consider when looking at a job. And, you know, as we've been talking throughout, it's not that, you know, well, I guess you could say probably like most people wouldn't be like, you know, I would rather like, you know, have a lower salary. Most people probably, you know, given everything else equal, would like the high salary. But other parts of this is not like there's like one like right answer, right? Like some people really want freedom to do whatever they want, but some people actually are like, no, you know, I don't want like all the possible options open for me. I want it to be like a little more guided. And so I think this this is a great lead-in to Jacqueline and I discussing our opinions on, you know, what we think of being the first data scientist at a company.
Our controversial polar ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
Okay, so dear podcast listeners, when we were writing our book, at the end of each chapter, we have an interview with a different data scientist expert in the field. And so many of them, in different contexts, made some point about, hey, it's really important to think about whether or not you want to be the first data scientist when you're taking a job. Because being a data scientist in a place where there hasn't been a data scientist before is such a different set of responsibilities that it's it can absolutely make or break that job for you if it is not in line with what particular interest you want. And so in particular, right, if you think about being the first data, if you're the 10th data scientist, what do you got to do? You got to show up. Someone's going to hand you, like, someone's going to hand you a database. Someone's going to hand you a code base. They're going to say, build more models, blah, 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 follow these patterns. If you are a first data scientist, no one is going to be there to tell you what to do, right? The data may not exist yet. You may need to go find it. No one's going to know what's the important models to build. You have to figure out what those are. And so not only do you have to actually figure out what work you should be doing, you have to do that work, and you have to do it in a way that paves a smooth path so that when the 2nd through 10th data scientists show up, it's much easier for them and things make sense. So it's really like triple the amount of responsibility than you'd have as being the 10th data scientist. And more responsibility sounds like something that is perhaps bad to many people, but for others, it's something that's actually a lot of fun and thrilling and way better than being the 10th.
Yeah, and I think also it's not just more, as you were saying, it's not just more responsibility the same, it's also different ones, right? So often a lot of the work you have to do is data engineering work, because maybe there isn't a data engineer, or even if there is a data engineer, they were optimizing things for the software engineering team and not for someone to query the data, for example, to do an analysis. And you have to be the one communicating, right? You have to pitch to the executive team, you know, I think, you know, I looked into this and we should do this type of thing. And you might get pushback, and you have to be the one to convince them, like, no, really, like, you know, from looking at all this data, like, you know, presenting the analysis and having those communication skills to do that.
Yes. So that's hard, having to do things like the data engineering and all these other responsibilities. There's also the, you have to figure out what you should be doing at all. And I remember like after a month, or maybe 2 months on my first time being the first data scientist, I had this feeling of like, I'm so stressed about this job. I don't know what I'm supposed to be working on. I don't know what's so important. And no one is telling me what is important. And that's really stressful. And then I realized like, oh no, wait, this job is supposed to be, no one tells me what's important. I just decide what's important and I need to like follow my instincts. And that paradigm shift helped me do a lot better on that job, but it was really stressful to get there. And even still, I have this perpetual lingering feeling of like, is this the right thing I should be doing? Is someone going to tell me I need to be doing something? Doing something else? Am I doing something wrong? I don't know. This is scary.
Yeah. So this all sounds like terrible. And this is why I, for example, maybe I'll eat my words in like 10 years, would not want to be a first data scientist. Because also you don't have mentorship, right? There's no other data scientists, like even at the company, even like peer mentorship you're missing out on. So this all, you know, I'm like, why? Who would ever want to be such a thing? But you, oh, Jacqueline.
Yeah. So I was going to say, can you like in like a couple, like, you know, like a, why, a minute or whatever. Just make the argument for being the 10th data scientist or the not first. Like, what is the argument?
Like, I feel like all we've been talking about has been the argument for that, but to lay it out clearly. But why not the sort of first data scientist? Is one, like, let's say you aren't as interested, for example, in data engineering work, or you're interested in having a more specialized role. You're like, wow, I'm really interested in like focusing on experimentation, for example. That is not going to be an option as a first data scientist. Like, sure, that can be one of the like 20 things you do, but you don't get to just have one area of focus. You have to be doing like, you know, modeling, and you have to do analytics and data engineering. So that's one thing. If you want to specialize, first data scientist, not for you. Second is I like having a community. Like I like having, and I have a, you know, really nice, large, like external community, but it's also nice having one at your company, just other people who understand the job that you're doing at specifically at your company, other people to learn from, other people to go to when your, you know, code isn't working and to pair with them. So I think that's a big advantage. And then finally, third, sort of, you know, especially if you're earlier in your career and you haven't seen how data science works at different companies, like how are you supposed to know some of the best practices, right? Like you may spend, you know, a while doing something because you don't realize, oh, there's this, you know, tool out there that is actually not that expensive that would do this for me, which you might have recognized if you had worked at some other companies where other experienced people had, you know, built in some best practices, some best tooling. So that's why I think, you know, I'm for being a, you know, later data scientist and not the first data scientist.
Okay. Good argument. And now I will take the floor.
The rebuttal.
So I really, really like solving problems as a job. And I really, really, really hate maintaining things that are not optimal as a job. And when you're the first data scientist, everything is a problem to solve, right? Like, how do we set up a data engineering stack, right? Should we be using neural networks or not? Should we be using R or Python? These are all interesting questions that need to be solved. And, you know, a thing I really hate on a job is getting somewhere, seeing something that's really inefficient. And, like, let's say everything was done in, like, or, you know, let's say everyone, like, this clearly, this model should have been a decision tree, but instead it was a linear regression. I hate seeing that and then having to be like, guys, we should change it. Let's make this big argument why we should change it. And then I finally convince the team we have to change it. And then I change it. And then we move on. And if you're the first data scientist, you just get to do it right the first time, right? So, like, I do so much better as a career in getting to come in, set good precedent. You know, like, maybe it's our code all lives in GitHub. No, in fact, that's a great example, right? If I'm the 10th data scientist, so often I will show up and, like, half the code isn't in a, so, you know, isn't in version control and no one's putting any movement into putting that in. And then I have to be like, all right, guys, come on, let's get together. Let's be smart. Let's have our code stored in a consistent way. And when you're the first data scientist, you just get to do that all right from the start. You get to, you know, get to set, I guess there's some, like, belief inside me that my ideas are good and I get to just implement them and then other people can follow them, as opposed to having to try and convince people to change what they're already doing, which is painful for me. So yes, it is more responsibility. Yes, you have to, like, figure out what's important. You have to set your precedents for the future. But all of that is absolutely worth, for me, the ability to put things in right the first time and get the ball moving in the right direction correctly, so that then when other people show up, things are moving smoothly and I could go work on the next problem.
And to give one other, like, positive point to being the first data scientist, I do think I've heard from folks that they're like, your learning is so accelerated, right? Because you have to wear all these different hats. You have to be the one communicating with the executive team. You have to be, like, doing some data engineering stuff. Like, you can learn a lot more than, you know, a downside of being at a huge, massive tech company is you may only ever get to, like, play in, like, one little small area because all these other details are taken care of for you. And also, you know, let's say it's like data engineering stuff. Also, like, you couldn't even really go into that if you wanted to, because, like, the data engineering done for, like, you know, that huge range, you know, that huge, like, scale of the data is going to be so different from what you do at a tiny company anyway. Like, it wouldn't even be that helpful if you tried to learn about it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, just what you were saying earlier, I don't think first data scientist is a good job for people early in their career, because you don't necessarily know what are good ideas and not yet. That's something you kind of have to get from experience and look at many places. But yeah, once you're mid-career and you're like, wow, I think I know enough that I think I can go in and start things. I know generally best practices. Then yes, you learn so much so quickly. And yeah, especially if you're like, I'm a decision scientist and I want to switch to ML engineer, or, like, some of those career shifts require you to be able to do a lot of this, like, juggling lots of hats. And so this is one great way to do it.
Yeah, and I do think, like, if you want to do sort of a compromise type thing, right, you could look at, you know, being, like, maybe the second or third data scientist at a startup, right? So, like, you're still a startup, you're still probably also going to be wearing the hats, but at least there's, like, someone else there, you know, maybe they're the chief data scientist and you're the senior data scientist or whatever. So it's not like, you know, it's not like suddenly it's totally completely, like, you know, like, if you're not the first, you might as well be the 100th, like, it's not going to make a difference. It's like, no, if you're the second or the third, especially if you come in soon after the first data scientist, or if you come in as a team, right? I've seen that too, where sometimes they'll hire a couple people at the same time to kind of build it out together.
Yeah, although I do think there is a meaningful difference between first and second. If you're at That's second, true. You already are fighting someone else's precedent. It's not, you're right, it's not the same as the 100th, but, like, there is, like, is there literally anything, right? And it's so That's easy fair. To put a database in place to decide, oh, we're going to use Python to blah, blah, blah. Right? Those, to try and undo someone else's decisions as person number two is, yeah, it's just harder. But yeah, no, I would not necessarily recommend this the job of first data scientist to many people just because it is very intense, high responsibility. But yes, there are amazing perks. And for me, it's like, it's the perfect job.
Yeah. All right. And with that, shall we go to a brief break?
Absolutely. Okay. For our last part of today's episode, we're going to play a game.
Yay!
Yeah. Okay. So this is Would You Rather? And I've got five would you rathers that I'm going to ask you. And then I might tell you my answers too, and we can talk about them. But you ready?
Let's do it.
Company, would you rather? Would you rather work at a company that lets you use any tool you want, but you have to work on like a really mundane project, like just finding duplicate records in data? Or would you rather work on a team that lets you work on any project you want, but you have to do it all in MATLAB?
Definitely the first one, because I think the advantage is, like, even if you're working on a mundane project, like, you could still build in learning there, right? So you could be like, all right, so I know how to find duplicate rows in R, but, like, I don't know how to find it in Python, so let me learn Python. Or you could say, actually, it turns out there's really not a good, package or way to solve this, you know, common problem, and so why don't I build a package to solve it? So for me, at least, like, I don't know. I love having an interesting project too. I think I get a lot of the joy out of the tools, and I feel like I would also really miss if I had to work only in MATLAB, the wonderful R community that I really enjoy being a part of.
Yeah, I don't know very much about the MATLAB community. I think I'd actually take the MATLAB answer though, just because I agree that like it's tough to work in languages you don't use as much or like or have a community or whatever. But I think it's so important to me that I actually think the project is like somewhat fulfilling that, well, I don't know. Yeah, I think I'd still go MATLAB.
Is MATLAB like a programming language that can do anything? You know what I mean? Like you know, if no one's ever done a neural network in MATLAB, like you could somehow do one.
Yes, I mean, I think it is technically Turing complete. So I think technically it could. But no, they do have packages for all that. But it's just it's just more engineering and
Okay. And also then it would be really, and I think it would be harder to find your next job.
Yes, they'd be like MATLAB. Okay, second question. Would you work at a company that has free breakfast, lunch, dinner, foosball, and an Olympic gym with pool, or have 40-hour work weeks?
Why can't I have both? Yeah, I know, right? You can't have both. Like, presumably also there is no COVID or whatever, or, you know, like the pandemic is over, so you can actually enjoy said part.
Wait, the pandemic is over, but only in their office. They have like a little safety.
Oh God, if it's only in their office, then I think absolutely that one. I think so many people at the moment would be like, oh my God, I could see people. But how bad to make this like, would you rather, but like how, what is the work hours in the first one and what are the perks in the second one?
Let's say that the hours in the first one, let's say 55 hours a week in the first one. And the perks in the second one are good health insurance, good things like that, but literally no food. Literally, you have to pay for your own coffee. Like,
I've heard
nothing. You walk, it's like walking in a sterile, like, you're walking in like a sterile, like, literally, the company just moved in. There's nothing. Office.
Yeah.
It's that beige. You know that beige.
I think I would still go with the second one. I have to say, like, you know, having worked at tech companies, I have gotten spoiled with, like, some free food. I mean, not at the, like, Google, like, you have massages level, but at the, like, you know, there's some, like, snacks and stuff around. So I do like all of that stuff, but at the end of the day, that's something I feel like, you know, whatever, I bring some snacks at home, do something like that, versus, like, having to spend, you know, an extra 15 hours of work. I don't know if the trade-off would be worth it to me. What about you?
You could take those extra 15 weeks, or you could take five of those extra 15 hours, drive Lyft around via Lyft drivers, and then use that to make the money for the breakfast, lunch, and dinner. No, I can't work more than like 40 hours a week on average. Like I can't, I just do not have the brain, personality, whatever to do that. And so no matter how much you entice me with breakfast, lunch, and dinner and foosball, yes, it has to be the 40-hour work week for me. That's really important. Okay, number three. Be at a company where you personally get to advise the CEO around the results of your data, or be at a company that is guaranteed not to go under in the next 365 days.
And presumably the first company, there's like a decent risk that it's going to go up under. I think actually...
Let's say a 20% risk it's going to go under.
Yeah. I think the second, but like not so much that I'm like that. I mean, especially again, like nowadays job seeking is hard. But like, I think also because I don't know if I value that much, like, having the CEO's ear, but maybe I should more. But I feel like at the companies I've worked at, it hasn't, I've never been a company where it's been like a huge huge problem. And also often, you know, companies, some companies are big enough, like you don't need, like CEO doesn't need to listen to you for you to enact huge change, right? It's just like just the VP or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that, yeah, actually people tend to like say, wow, you can really get listened to, the CEO listens to you as like a job perk, but like, does it actually matter for a data scientist? Like what matters is your model's being put in place or not, you know, more. Yeah, I think that's, or like, is your, yes, I'm with you. So I think, I would say with the COVID, I probably would company that wouldn't go under this year or the next year in 65 days. But I would say maybe 3 years ago, I would have gone to the CEO one. Because I'm like, ah, I'll take those odds. Number four, be on a team with a diverse set of employees, like different age, gender, ethnicities, backgrounds, really diverse group, or make an extra $30,000 a year.
I feel like this is like a trick question. This is like, are you a good person question.
what number of dollars makes you give up your morals? Actually, I changed this question several times in writing it because I was trying to get the dollar number that make you have to think a little.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, to be perfectly honest, I think that answer is also influenced by like, are you someone who would be in a, because like, you know, probably the non-diverse team is not like, oh, it's all other white women, which is not diversity. It's probably like white men. So I'm still in the minority. Yeah. Yeah. But even if it was all other white women, let's say, so it's like, ah, oh, everyone else looks like me, you know? No, I mean, I think there's a big cost to that, right? There's a big cost in terms of, you know, tons of research around diverse teams making better products. But also I think the other thing is, you know, in real life, it's often not an accident. Right. Like there is some reason that this team is like seven white men. And even in a field like data science, where it's like, you know, unfortunately, there's still, you know, some, you know, issues of like increasing representation, like all across the board. It's definitely a negative sign to me if I see a non-diverse team, because there certainly are enough, you know, people who are older or with disabilities or people of color or, you know, women, that you shouldn't have a team that all looks the same.
I think that is a really good point. I totally agree. And I think it is really bad for the company long term. What if it was $50,000? No, just kidding. You don't have to sell out your morals on this podcast. But no, I think for me, it's like there's some, so long as it has enough money, like I want a job where there's enough money in it that I can be okay. And then, so like, it's not like, but I probably wouldn't take a job. I don't think, I guess there's no way, I don't see a scenario where I'd be like, I will take a job with a team that I don't feel comfortable in exchange for any amount of money. Like there's no amount of money that make me take a job that I feel uncomfortable with in the diverse set of people, even 50K. Okay, last one. You do work at a company where you have to fight to connect with 100 tiny, well-maintained databases of all different types, or one massive Oracle database that everyone puts all of their data in and no one's ever kept track of.
How hard is the fight in the first one? It's like, but like each time I want to access a new one,
it's not a very hard fight, but there's like 100 of them. So like you gotta like,
yeah. Oh, that's a hard one. Is it?
Maybe fight was a bad word.
Did you get inspired by like, do you want to fight? Like, what is it? Like a 100 duck-sized horses or one duck-sized horse? Whatever it is, yes, okay.
But I would rather, this is terrible, I hate this both. I think I'd rather take all of my data in one crummy database than data well-maintained across 100 databases.
No, I feel like I want the first one, because the first one I at least know with enough time I can surmount this obstacle, and like once I do, I will be in a happy place, versus that like massive database. It's like, how long will I be miserable, and like will I ever be able to figure out what these things mean and why? And then I have to like go and like talk with 50 different people to try to figure out like what this definition. No, I think with the first one, at least I know there's like an end in sight, right? Like the pain might end at some point.
Yes. Okay, well, that ends my game, and this ends our show. So check us out on our next episode, which is all about the skills you need as a data scientist and how you get them. Thank you so much for listening. Please tweet at us or share us on LinkedIn. We would love to hear your feedback on the show, if you have any questions for us. And you can use the hashtag DataSciCareer. So that's data, sci, like the first half of science, career. You can buy a copy of our book at bestbook.cool and use the code buildbook40% for 40% off. The theme song from our show is by the extremely funny Matt Bouchel. And thanks to our publisher, Manic, for helping make our book exist.
And may none of your Excel formulas be circular.
I love that.